The Football Show on Off the Ball.
With Sky. Watch Premier League, Women's Super League, EFL, Scottish Premiership, and much more. Live on Sky Sports.
I'm prepared to anything I can.
Well, do it then.
Come see again.
Do it then.
What about your start to the game?
It wasn't bad, was it?
Why should an honest answer be a mistake?
How can a modern day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
Welcome along to the Football Show, where with 77 minutes on the clock, Leicester are 2-1 up against Spurs, and Manchester United with 45 minutes on the clock, second half has just started. They are nil all at the Brentford Community Stadium. Dan McDonald of the Irish Independent is here in studio. Dan, great to see you in person.
Joe, yeah, we do this all the time, don't we? You
know, let's never take it for granted again.
I mean, it's looking good, isn't it? That there's a COVID update for the evening. Completed.
Done.
It's
finished.
Well, there might be fans in stadiums, though, over the next month, which is very good, you
it
know?
It seems so, yeah. We're headed that way. The 5th of February is Ireland-Wales. Would be expecting capacity, I think.
Well, probably less people watching you on telly, or is that one of your games?
No, no.
With all these announcements,
no, that'll be RTE, Jackie Hurley.
Oh, yeah. I believe you're working together today. I see. Yeah,
I mean,
it's like seeing like the you know
people
it's
who
like
were
Live
there.
Aid, Live Aid or something like it's
people
all the stars
who,
coming
people,
together.
People who were there said they hadn't seen broadcasting chemistry like it.
Yeah, I'd say. I mean,
listen.
I mean, just like just fate has kept you apart for so long, and all of a sudden these broadcasting minds collide.
Correct.
I mean,
yeah. We're going to. The talks have started about a show.
Well, yeah, okay.
So listen, lots to get to. There is lots going on. We were just chatting there during the news because you heard Roberto Lopez on the show last night, who, well, his wish has been granted. If any podcast listeners heard him monitoring scores at that stage, he wasn't quite sure what the future held for him. The future holds Sadio Mane.
Yeah, they're true. And they're true as a third place team. And without getting into the permutations of it, they have to face Senegal. Just the other potential options, those teams aren't going through. So they're playing Senegal next Tuesday, I think, in another city. So I would have been, because I've been working with him for the diary he's been doing with the Independent. So I was chatting to him earlier today. And I think at that stage, they sort of knew this was going to happen. Unless there was mad results tonight, which didn't happen. So they're moving to another city to face Senegal next Tuesday. Senegal are ranked 20th in the world, they're a top ranked African team. Sadio Mane, Mendy from Chelsea in goals, Ismail Assar from Watford, Idrissa Gueye, quite a few other like names, Koulibaly at Napoli, and they're a good side, although they have not played well in the competition so far. I mean, the competition has actually really improved over the last couple of days. I think a lot of people probably watched some of the earlier games and weren't too impressed by them, low scoring games. And like Ghana, Comoros last night, this tiny nation, Comoros, like population of 800,000, beat Ghana last night. Ghana had a meltdown, it was 3-2. Brilliant game. It's starting to get good, but Senegal have completely stunk the place out in terms of the football they've played so far. They've played three games, they won their group, but they only scored one goal, and that was Mane's 97th minute penalty in the first game. They've got like they've been dreadful to watch so far and haven't played well. So I think Cape Verde fancy a crack at them, to be honest, you know. Even though, like, I would have been speaking to Roberto before the competition, and of course, you go to, you know, AFCON, and none of these players were in the group. But what do you think about when you think about African Cup of Nations, the stars, the ones that are missing from the Premier League? You think Mahrez and Salah and Mane, and going to get to face one of them now next Tuesday. So that'd be good. Something to watch. Hopefully it's afternoon, next Tuesday afternoon or something.
No, it's amazing. For anyone who hasn't been reading his diaries in the Irish Independent or didn't catch the piece last night, so he's playing for Shamrock Rovers. He's 29 years of age. He initially ignored a LinkedIn message in Portuguese. It turned out it was from the Cape Verde manager. And thankfully, said manager followed up in English. And he's been playing for Cape Verde since 2019. And he's played in all the World Cup qualifiers, for instance, for the Qatar World Cup. But he's really having a brilliant tournament. The first Irishman to play in an African Cup of Nations. Father left Cape Verde aged 16. Mother is Irish. Ricardo grew up in Crumlin, very much Dublin. Played in underage teams with the likes of Matt Doherty and Jeff Hendrick and others. And was going about his business, having a very good League of Ireland career. But this, for him, is this very unexpected adventure. And he's really rising to meet the occasion. I mean, it's not like you were just saying during the news and in a very respectful way, he wouldn't have jumped out to you as absolute star in waiting here.
No, certainly not. I mean, and I think I don't think he would argue with that assessment himself, in the sense that, like, you know, he's when he was in his early 20s, like, he was going down another route. He wasn't even sure necessarily about full time football at a particular stage. Would have been playing with Bows and would have been playing part time for a while, and even going to Shamrock Rovers, maybe around 2016, I could be wrong. Like, even his first season or two in Shamrock Rovers, some people wondered would he be retained for the following year. There was always that sort of discussion there. But the last couple of years, he's been very good. And the way they play, Shamrock Rovers play with a back three, with him as the sweeper, and he's quite quick, so his recovery speed is very good. And if they're under pressure, you know, he's very good at sort of mopping up sort of situations. And with Cape Verde, the last couple of games they've played with a back three, with him as the sweeper, and you can actually see why he's rated very highly by them. They need someone like him, and he's played well. But of course, it's a step up now, you know, next Tuesday when you got the speed of Sadio Mane sort of flying through, presumably. So, but it is a great story, because people might hear his name, as you do, and might think in some way, oh, did he grow up elsewhere or something? Like, he's not. He couldn't be any more Dublin in terms of the environment where he's played, you know, where he started. So it is basically an Irishman playing at a major tournament,
yeah,
at the moment, and is flying the flag for a lot of people. I think a lot of people who've played with him and played alongside him or against him are getting the buzz out of it, because, of course, you know, when the League of Ireland season restarts in a month's time, he'll be playing. And it's just as like, well, I mean, this guy there was good enough to go over and play in AFCON last month, you know. Yeah. And there's Jack Byrne on his side, and it always helps to have these personalities that you can sell to people.
Well, he got a great reaction last night. Very likeable fella, so we wish him well. It was great to have him on. Manchester United 0, Brentford 0. Just to bring you up to date with a few bits and pieces. United, by the way, were dominant in this game early on. The Brentford fullbacks were pushed deep, and therefore the United fullbacks had loads of possession. It was eerily similar to when Man City were at Old Trafford, and Cancelo and Kyle Walker had about a gazillion touches. But then around the 15-minute mark, Brentford must have had five or six chances, which were all last-minute saves or deflections, and then out for a corner, and then another scramble and almost another goal, then out for another corner. And it was a real pivotal point in the game. Manchester United got going again and have been on top. But every time Brentford break, there is a whiff of danger, and they've hit the crossbar at one stage. So this is one of these tricky games for Manchester United, and if they're hoping to make the Champions League places next year, they can't afford anything but 3 points this evening. Miguel Delaney, Dan, had a piece today which I mentioned to Johnny Ward and Richie on the news round. I'm just going to mention again for anyone who didn't hear it, because I think it spoke volumes about where Manchester United are, as Brentford have another good chance. So this is not the full piece, clearly, but Miguel Delaney, very well-sourced piece in the London Independent. In one of Ralph Rangnick's early training sessions, the German barked an instruction in a manner that startled some of the Manchester United players. Looks were exchanged, quips soon followed. Rangnick's austere manner has become one of his more conspicuous characteristics when he's actually on the training ground. Some of the players joke about how he's shouting again. A few roll their eyes and wish he'd be less loud.
Yeah, like, I mean, it's just
a hell of an opener.
It's sort of like people who don't like their new substitute teacher or something like that, you know, kids. It's just, and I think it might be when Damien Delaney was on it a Saturday a couple of weeks ago, and talked about this general theme, you know, in general, that, like, when a manager comes into a club, you always sense that they have to get the pitch of their early meetings or their early discussions right, and that sets the tone. And it just seems, it does appear like that whatever's happened, he hasn't got off on the right foot.
Well, he walked into the room and screamed.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, this is the thing. But I don't know, like, I heard you make the point earlier, and I agree with it, that you said it was like one of these pieces that comes out when a manager is gone. You have the, all of a sudden, and I've experienced this, where it's like someone goes and then all of a sudden you start to hear all these things that happened. And the fact that it's happening live, you know, that's coming out sort of week to week, is, would have to be the most worrying aspect of that, I think, because, but also as well, I mean, we're just watching them score at the moment here, so clearly they're on the way up.
And Elanga scoring.
By the time the error is over, they're back in trouble. I mean, I don't think it changes anything really in the broader picture. Like, to me, when the amount of that stuff is coming out, because sometimes you hear stuff when the manager goes because people weren't leaking or letting stuff out around that time, because there might be some kind of culture there or a fear that someone, if something was let out, there'd be an inquest as to who was doing this, you know, and that's sometimes why this all comes out after the piece, you know, where it unraveled. The fact it's happening now, and it seems to me, I don't know, like the guys that work on this, but it seems to me to be multiple sources, just the sheer volume of stuff that is coming out, and I've no reason to doubt it in any way. It would point to a culture where this is sort of, there's no one there actually, someone should actually be alarmed that this is coming out.
I know.
You feel like it might be just every man for himself in there, right?
Well, that's precisely the phrase I would say. There is a sense of every man for himself. It's rare that a club this big is this leaky. The Anthony Elanga goal is an exceptional finish. One of the few success stories under Rangnick of late. It's a brilliant first touch, tricky ball, bouncing, coming in at pace. He takes it with the outside of his right foot and helps it up for himself into the air. I would say deliberately so. He knew what he was doing and headed the ball into the net. So Manchester United make the breakthrough, 55 minutes on the clock. And there we are. So presumably that stems a disaster.
We'll see. We've got 35 minutes left. The kind interpretation of all this, if you want to sort of play detective on the whole thing, is that, you know, could the issue be players who are unhappy? And if players leave this month, you know, does it stop? But it just feels like it's more ingrained than that, you know, the tone of the stuff. And it's not just a case of, you know, individual cases of one particular player feeling downbeat. It's the collective, and like that whole thing of people not wanting someone shouting. Now, I know people will say you need a different, like, you know, you might need to have a more of an arm around the shoulder style at times, and you know, the days of the fearsome leader as a manager might be gone. But it did appear from, like, I don't think when Rangnick took over, the profile pieces were sort of portraying him as a sort of a rabid, sort of over the top. You know, there was a bit of that, you know, very like, you know, he had an assertiveness about him, and you could see there's a quirkiness to his CV that suggests like he has a bit of that. But it wasn't like, you know, you had all these images. Like, remember when Ireland appointed Trapp and there was images of him going mad at a press conference, and everyone was very excited about this because thinking he's going to come in and put the life into these players because that's what you need.
I did fantasize him about Trapp going to town on you in a press conference.
Just
it's very exciting.
I never really did it, to be fair. I think we were all hoping that would happen.
We did have
not about me, obviously, but
he was more dismissive. He was like, I can't even get, you're not, this is not relevant.
Who are these people?
Uli Hesse did tell us that Rangnick tends to fall out with people, but he didn't say he's going to go and scream at the players and really alienate them, which is the thrust of this.
But even the portrayal of it,
they've been under Rangnick, they've been nothing short of abysmal.
Yeah, oh no, they have been. But I was just thinking there, like, even the phrasing of how some of these pieces, and Miguel's piece is good, and there's been other pieces, even the framing of it, like, it's not, it would suggest that even some people who are involved in putting this out there are probably not, like, and some of them probably mightn't be doing too enamoured by the players either, because it actually doesn't portray the players as being hard done by. It sort of presents them as being slightly pathetic.
I don't think anyone reads that paragraph and says, God, the poor players.
Yeah, it's like the poor lad. I mean, it's chaos in there at the moment. He shouted at them. I mean, how dare, like, generally that's actually playing to, like, fans fantasize about the idea of their underperforming team being slaughtered by someone.
Miguel used the word that the shouting startled them. I mean, like they're deer.
Yeah, like exactly. It's like these people who wade into the Phoenix Park and don't show the proper decorum. You know,
feeding the deer in the Phoenix Park needs to stop.
That's actually, I didn't realise that.
Odd phenomenon.
It really is. I mean, we're going on a complete tangent, but I did visit the deer at Phoenix Park recently, and you know, mentioned it, and got sort of people replying, "Don't feed the deer." I didn't realise it was that big of a thing. I didn't. To be clear, I did not feed the deer.
No, good. But because it's one of the absolute miracles of the Phoenix Park. That you can walk in and walk right up to the deer.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it's absolutely wonderful, and for kids it's amazing. And she was, because I used to live right by the Phoenix Park, so it was always one of the, you know, treats of a walk. Oh my God, there they are, let's go over. And then you see Johnny and Mary giving them like bread, and you're,
yeah, that's just like,
what, that can't be good for them.
Yeah, no, then over Christmas, and I have to say, yeah, really, really enamoured by the deer. Very friendly. Very friendly, but definitely didn't bring any grub.
Good.
But I mean, no one was in there shouting in German at them, like, you know, sort of making them
press,
you know, making them sort of head off to head off towards the zoo or something, you know. It just, as you say, like, startled is just more like, you know, we were having a perfectly good time in here in this carriage, like, why did you turn off the volume?
I think that's Miguel having a degree of holding a mirror up to the player.
Yeah, potentially. Yeah, potentially. You could say that, but again, you probably. I'm just surmising here, but like you probably wouldn't screw over sources by how you portray that either. You know what I mean? It does reflect the general.
It's subtle enough
tone. That is not sympathetic to the players.
Yeah.
That's coming from other places, you would imagine.
Just to mention and reflect on briefly Chelsea last night, they drew 1-1 at the Amex against Brighton. Did take the lead. Weirdly, Ziyech scored and just didn't celebrate. It just spoke of a certain unhappiness in there. And then Webster equalised, and so 1-0. Chelsea completely out of the title race now. It's incredible their collapse, because they were top of the table going into Christmas. So tired mentally and physically is what Tuchel is saying. 7 Premier League games, 1 win. Now, he's a lot of credit in the bank, and he's been incredibly impressive thus far. But this is Chelsea. So 1 win in 7. They're 12 points off City. In the last 3 weeks, they've played 4 games, just 3 points. They are in the Carabao Cup final. So Tuchel, he was talking to Five Live. We look tired because we are tired, and we played against a strong Brighton team. He has given the players 2 days off to try and get them in the mood for Spurs on Sunday. It's their 21st game since the start of November, and COVID's a factor, and the loss of Chilwell and Reece James is disastrous for them because Alonso and Azpilicueta clearly are not in that league when it comes to attacking. And then there's the Lukaku situation. He was very poor against Man City. And then the feeling last night was maybe he just didn't get much service. Our players looking for him. So it's amazing how it's changed so dramatically in the last month under Tuchel.
Did you see Jake Humphrey was tweeting last night about...
I'm not sure I follow Jake Humphrey.
I don't either. I mean, it was just like... Do you rate Jake Humphrey? Are you a fan of Jake Humphrey? Or you like his life or something? Maybe that was an off-air discussion. I can't remember. You're saying it's a great gig Jake Humphrey has.
Jealous anyway, of his salary. It's
yeah,
a great gig.
That's what it is, yeah. I knew it was something. But he put up something about...
I'm not sure this is something we should...
Yeah, this is live, Joe, just to be clear.
Dump! Manchester United have just scored a second, and they're all smiles.
They're all happy.
And nobody's like, shouting at them.
And I assume there's noise from the crowd when the goal goes in as well that hasn't actually startled them.
No.
Like, you know, but Jake Humphrey put it up. Tuchel was... Chelsea 12 points behind City. Lampard was 11 points behind this time last year and he got sacked. You know, just saying, or words to that effect. And it's like, well, I mean, it's a strong point. Apart from the fact that there's the Champions League, which is a significant asterisk.
It would be, and there have been some... big cases, but well, it would be an all-time low for Chelsea to get rid of.
But do you remember when Tuchel came in and you had your thing about the Chelsea journey?
Yeah, I was done with them.
There was like that 18 months thing that was talked about, and no matter then when they started going well, you're thinking nah. But I mean, what they are at that sort of 12 month stage now, aren't they?
But I'm still
12. Yeah.
Really, I still find months. Tuchel really compelling, interesting. The football they play is very good. He's very impressive. Like, it's very alive still. You know, it's going places. And if they were to just pull the plug now and get yet another multilingual, very impressive manager in there, I just think I'd be...
Sometimes you just need a plot twist for the new series. I don't know if they're going to... I mean, I don't... You talk about their history and you really, like, they don't deserve any leeway,
so
but...
You brought this up via Jake Humphrey, so... There's no suggestion that he's under immediate pressure.
No, but...
Until Jake started stirring.
Jake, yeah. I mean, let's go back to Jake. But I do think there are signs recently, just reading the sort of reports around it, that he's not in that situation. Like, it seems like Chelsea let him do what he wanted around the Lukaku one, for example, the little conflict, that he seemed to be given more authority in how that should be handled.
How do you think he did handle that situation?
I thought he handled it quite well, yes, to be honest.
I didn't think it was that difficult a situation to handle.
No, but at Chelsea you can make that very complicated if you want to, or at any club really. In fact, if you're at a club that's a bit where things aren't stable, something like that can easily become a bigger thing very quickly, you know.
And
what
so
about a player?
If a player
at Manchester United gave an interview like that at the moment,
it's happening
for
once a week.
Well, that's the truth. Yeah.
Is it just coincidental that their form has dipped around the time of this Lukaku situation?
Well, the only thing is, as well, is that when Tuchel then, after the Man City game, he wasn't particularly on board with defending Lukaku, and ultimately, you know, what does seem to be plausible is that he maybe does fear that he's not necessarily suited to the way that they want to play. And in a way, with some of his quotes after the Man City game, it was almost like him suggesting, well, you can see why I've been justified
Pat Nevin maybe, is of that opinion.
Yeah, to not like I didn't hear Pat Nevin, but like that would have been.
Well, I said to Pat Nevin, I don't understand the thinking behind Tuchel publicly going after Lukaku like this. And Nevin said, sometimes you can be under pressure to play a certain player, be that from Roman Abramovich on the phone, which is not the case, or the fact that he cost 100 million, which he did. Yeah. And maybe in your heart of hearts, you know it's not right. And so at a certain point, there's a degree of right. You want him, here he is, and then you're highlighting to everybody why he doesn't work so that you're not under subsequent pressure to play him.
And in a way that possibly contradicts the point that he has full authority if you're insinuating that he's in a situation where there's a player played that he doesn't, he isn't 100% sure about, but maybe he was sure about it, or maybe he was up for it, and then you get in there and you realise you're working with the player that, you know, there in front of you, and you're thinking maybe actually this isn't.
Because it starts so well. You remember the Arsenal game, and it looked like, wow. And he scored a couple of really eye-catching goals early on. You thought, this really puts Chelsea in pole position. Man City aren't getting Harry Kane. And it looked very good.
Yeah.
But his performances have dipped for sure. There was the injury. It took a while to come back. And at the moment, it's not good.
No, definitely. And like, he was given softball questions after that City game. He didn't really get to service, and he wasn't buying it at all. Oh. And you're sort of looking at that going, okay.
I also think Tuchel would regard that he's not getting the service as a personal failing of Tuchel.
Yeah. Do you think?
Well, this team that you've created here, they're not working well enough to create chances for Lukaku.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So I think there was a degree of, well, hang on a second.
Yeah.
I'm not accepting that.
But I don't sense like
he did have two good chances.
Yeah. No, like, I don't sense it's like some kind of end of days thing there at all. But you do know there is that Chelsea asterisk there that comes with, you know, that comes with them.
There is. We've loads more to get to. We're going to take a very short break. So Manchester United suddenly 2-0 up against Brentford. As soon as really we started talking about how terrible things were at Old Trafford, they started scoring. So 2-0 Manchester United, was Bruno Fernandes with the second. It seems like it's an amazing game between Leicester and Spurs. They're into the 97th minute. Last time I gave you an update, Leicester were 2-1 up. It's now 3-2 Spurs, which is amazing.
There was a suggestion Spurs have played very well in the first half, even, you know, to end up trailing.
It's more bizarre than I thought. So it was 2-1. James Maddison had put Leicester 2-1 up in the 76th minute. 7 minutes of added time, Leicester are still 2-1 up. In the 96th minute, Bergwijn scored an equaliser. In the 97th minute, Bergwijn scored a winner.
Nice. And was there some talk he might have been shipped out as well, potentially?
And he just scored two in 2 minutes in added time. So extraordinary situation there. Leicester 2-3, presumably full-time whistle about to go. So we'll find out a bit more what happened there. Our football coverage here on Off the Ball is brought to you by Sky. You can watch every single live Premier League game on Sky Sports, BT Sport and Premier Sports. A short ad break. More to come from Dan in just a sec.
It was a real kind of statement of intent. Yeah, right from the start, they were really, really, really on it.
You can be absolutely sure that they will want to leave absolutely nothing in that changing room.
The Club Championship Show. Subscribe to the GAA podcast feed on the OTB Sports app now.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Sky. All the football you love in one place. Across Sky Sports, BT Sport and Premier Sports.
Welcome back. Manchester United 2-0 up away to Brentford, and Spurs have come back to beat Leicester 3-2. That is a result between Leicester and Spurs this evening. Dan McDonald in studio. There is lots going on. I will just mention the Everton situation. I don't think we'll get into it tonight, but the current favourite for the job is Wazza.
Well, he's doing an okay job at Derby at the moment in difficult circumstances, but I don't know.
Roberto Martinez is second favourite. It seems the issue for Martinez is that the Belgian FA are saying, yeah, no, we're not accepting you doing both jobs at the same time.
Yeah.
It's a World Cup year. So that seems to have cooled his interest. Frank Lampard will be interviewed by the club, according to the Telegraph.
Wow.
And then Nuno Espirito Santo is 20-1. So really, it's between Rooney and Lampard.
It does appear to be that way.
Two of the greats from that German defeat in South Africa all those years ago.
Oh,
Lampard
God.
Robbed.
Oh yeah, is that the first Venn diagram crossover between them you would think of? I mean, possibly so.
I just see Gareth Barry being skinned by Mesut Ozil.
Yeah,
these are the images that flow back.
And Thomas Müller flying. Yeah, I was at that game. Yeah. It was Harry Redknapp was in the press box, because at the time there was a big thing over Redknapp maybe getting the job, you know, and he got up with 10 minutes to go and sort of made a walk through the press. I don't know what he was working for, BBC or something, and like he was obviously walking down. I thought it was a well-timed walk, because obviously, you know, if you're
eye-catching.
If you're writing your sort of colour piece at that stage, and it's like, I mean, there was one of our own walking down the steps at the end of the game here, you know.
He couldn't bear to watch when he knew what he could have done.
A lot of Radio 5 lads, or a lot of the BBC radio broadcast, like not the, say, presenters or the pundits, but maybe a lot of people doing the other shows, like daytime shows and stuff, like they were all there in their vintage England gear, ready for this big game against Germany. They weren't happy. Completely turned over. But yeah, because that was the World Cup, where Rooney was shouting at the camera after the Algeria game.
Yeah, there was a lot going on angry with them off the field.
I think that was a miserable camp for all of them as well too. But
I hope he gets it. Just be fascinating. I'm not itching to see Lampard have another go.
He seems to be. The thing about Rooney is that it's a really tough situation at Derby at the moment. And Derby towards the end of last season in the Championship would have been following them a bit just because of the Irish players there, and they were a bit of a shambles, and they were very lucky to stay up, just with even their management of certain situations and stuff wasn't great. But this season, in fairness, they've become a lot more solid with tight sort of financial situations. They've been eking out results. I watched them recently, I think it was against West Brom, was it? And he's done a good job, but you sort of feel like, and it's a bit like Lampard initially, who was learning at Derby and doing very well at Derby, it's like that fine line, when do you jump? Because it's a tough one, because you can be pilloried when you do that jump and it doesn't work out, but then at the same time, is this the perfect chance?
You'd have to say about
judgment
Rooney,
is everything with these things,
Sure. What you have to say about Rooney is, around the game a long time, worked under some of the world's best managers, had the footballing intelligence to play a lot of different positions and the discipline to do so. And I would say as well, no exaggeration, I think his Sunday Times column when he was writing it was the best football column around in terms of insight, in terms of breaking down games or assessing players that everybody was talking about. He would come along and really convince you of his argument, really impress. Like, it was kind of surprised me a touch, which in hindsight is silly because of the career he's had. But I thought, there is something there.
It was
there.
Good. And listen, he obviously was working with someone on that, but I think that the insights were there.
The insights were his.
You can see that, and it was presented. Now, as I said, he's had one or two off-the-field things in the last year, which you think, he has to, you go back to Everton, right? And there's something very, it's an emotional move as well as a career move. Like in Derby, he's doing his job and in very difficult circumstances. But his attachment there is to, the players he's working with. But there's a degree of ambition. He's doing a job for that club, doing the best as an employee. Mm-hmm. You go to Everton and you're acting off different instincts and impulses to a degree, and you're back to Liverpool, and it's a sort of it's a potentially a fraught situation because there's a lot of unrest around the club, and you can see the massive appeal for going in initially straight away, and what a great story that would be, however many years it is on since his first goal, probably close to 20 now maybe. But at the same time, there's something to be said for maybe sticking with where he is. It's honestly, managers live and die by these decisions, and your stock is at a certain level, and maybe some people would say, actually no, just have the balls and go for it now, take your opportunity when it comes. How can you turn it down? But it will be good, because there just seems to have been an evolution in his management even over the last year, which looks to be very trending upwards.
Speaking of Derby, because I want to talk to you about the Jamie McGrath situation, but Jason Knight is still only 20 and has played 100 games for Derby, which is a pretty impressive feat. So it seems a reported 16 clubs are interested in signing Jason Knight from Derby. Some Premier League clubs included. I've seen Everton and Wolves heavily linked, and Crystal Palace, Leicester, Leeds. Burnley, Newcastle, all not uninterested. So this is a 20-year-old Republic of Ireland player in high demand amongst Premier League clubs. Where is he going to go?
Oh, I don't know where he's going to go. I mean, I'm trying to sort of make inquiries with this, and I think there's been so many clubs linked that it's hard to sort of distill where it stands at the moment. Is there a definitive one? Because the Derby situation even has changed over the last week or so.
Will he go this month?
Well, the suggestion was he wasn't necessarily desperate to, but just with developments with Derby, that the plight looks grimmer, that they may have no option. you know, that it may have to happen, and it's not one where he's desperate to get out.
It's not £8 million territory.
Yeah, which, I mean, he'd be worth more than that for me, but obviously Derby are in no position to quibble. Like, you know, and that's it. Like, they're vulnerable at the moment. Like, there's another young Irish kid there as well, Festi Ebiseli, who's doing really well there too. People, if they want to look back the highlights of the weekend, this long burst and 60-yard run he made from one box to the other to make a goal against Sheffield United, really good. Jason Knight he'll play in the Premier League eventually. I've no doubt about that. But you know, you have to be careful as well. Like, some of the clubs you mentioned again there are in relegation battles. You want it to be an upward progression for him wherever he does go, and go somewhere that's solid and Premier League stable.
Marcus Rashford has scored a goal. It's been, I think, 12 games, top of my head, since he scored one. And eventually he cracks a smile when McTominay says, "Come on." So Manchester United 3-0 up. Ralph Rangnick is on the bench and turns to Cristiano Ronaldo, whispers something into his ear. And suddenly everyone at Manchester United much happier.
I mean, that's added another layer to the evening. A Rashford goal.
Yeah.
He was speaking openly there, Rangnick, so the lip readers will be onto that.
Yeah. Rashford, he was put in on the right-hand side and finished pretty well, put it into the top right corner. Manchester United cruising at this stage. They've broken Brentford. It was McTominay who won the ball in midfield. That was the real thrust of the move, and then he galloped forward. See, there is something in McTominay for sure, and laid the ball off to Bruno, who laid it off to Rashford, and he finished first time. But McTominay, it was brilliant midfield play, you'd have to say, all round midfield play, won the ball well, and then good feet and good engine, and United 3-0 up. Jamie McGrath, I wanted to ask you about, Dan. Jamie McGrath, we're familiar with. We had him on the show after he played against Portugal away, and since his mid-20s now, he's at St Mirren. He scored 17-odd goals, 10 penalties included in the 2021 season, and seems to have done really well over there. He's out of contract at the end of the year. St Mirren want to keep him at the club. If he signs the deal, he'll presumably become one of the better-paid players at the club. However, naturally, other clubs are interested. Aberdeen are, not sure what the current situation is, interested. So it seems the discussions with Aberdeen have fallen through. Now, the Aberdeen manager, Stephen Glass, was asked why the move for Jamie McGrath did fall through.
All our targets that we want players, everybody we're looking at, we want players that want to come and play for Aberdeen, see the profile that we can give them, see what the club offers, and see a game like tomorrow night and think you want to be a part of it. I think there's a pressure to being an Aberdeen player that's not for everybody. So it's we'll get the right people in that can help us.
That's the Real Madrid manager, Stephen Glass, there.
Do you remember Stephen Glass was... He was briefly the assistant manager of Shamrock Rovers. Who would you think was the manager of Shamrock Rovers at the time? Can I throw that at you?
Go on.
Stephen Kenny. He worked under Stephen Kenny when Kenny's ill-fated stint at Shamrock Rovers. Stephen Glass was there.
Do we think Jamie McGrath can't handle this?
Nah, it's rubbish.
Aberdeen?
It's absolute rubbish.
I
just think that's absolute rubbish. That's just garbage. I think what's happened here is, from my reading of it, I think the McGrath situation is an interesting one. Like, Aidan Fitzmaurice would have been reporting on it for us, you know, and other places have reported on it, like the other clubs that have come in, and it certainly tallies with stuff I would have heard, I suppose, over the last while. Like, to me, I was actually disappointed when I saw the reports crop up again that McGrath might be going from another club in Scotland, because I'd sort of heard, you know, that Championship clubs were in for him and that's where he would be going. And I was surprised with the stories that, like, Aberdeen was really going to happen. And I'm sort of wondering, and this is me now, this is speculating more so, that I would doubt the extent to how far he really went down the road with Aberdeen. I think,
because he was terrified.
Well, so he was obviously scared of Aberdeen. I mean, having played for Ireland and Portugal and played in, you know, some big games over the last couple of months, I do not think the status of Aberdeen is something that's going to break down Jamie McGrath, and I doubt anyone who knows him. Now, maybe, I don't know. I think Jamie McGrath's I think in the last year he's changed representation. Yeah. And of course, like, you know, agents have to do their bit, you know, and you know, where they, I think, you know, they might have been talking to Scottish clubs, but to me, certainly, my understanding of it was that there was decent Championship interest.
Okay.
Birmingham was one of the ones that was mentioned. And to me, once that became a viable option, Jamie McGrath, it'd be crazy to move to another Scottish top
flight.
I mean, it's been a great platform for him, and he's done brilliantly well at St Mirren, and it's been great to see him thrive there.
Yeah.
But the age that he's at, if the opportunity to go to the Championship is there, I suspect that they've told Aberdeen, we're not going to you, and this is the jilted reaction. I don't think Jamie could say, I can't do it because I don't fancy. I can't imagine playing in front of like slightly more fans than I do at the moment.
Yeah.
It's more, he's going to go where the best move for him would be.
He's 25 years of age when you mention his age there, so there is a degree of now or never if he's going to take the plunge. Interestingly, his St Mirren manager, Jim Goodwin, didn't have him involved in the game against Dundee United on Tuesday, yesterday, and he said Jamie didn't feel his head was in the right place for the game tonight. A lot of speculation, it's been messing with his head, we'll need to get it resolved as soon as possible. So that certainly suggests he hasn't turned down Aberdeen because I want to stay at St Mirren and go nowhere. That suggests something's in motion.
I'd be shocked if he didn't move to England before the end of the month. And he was so close to joining Hibs before the window closed in August, it just fell through. I think you might have spoke to him about that.
Yeah.
I could be wrong. I mean, maybe there's another Scottish club that's going to come in there, and maybe that might happen, but I would have thought England would be more likely.
Interesting story has broken this evening. The FA are looking into a yellow card which was shown to an Arsenal player, and the reason they're looking into it is bookmakers were in touch to flag suspicious betting patterns. So it happened this season. It's understood the bookmakers flagged the FA to an unusual amount of money placed on the Arsenal player being shown a yellow card during a Premier League game this season. The FA told The Athletic the FA is aware of the matter in question and looking into it. Multiple gambling industry insiders have told The Athletic that the pattern of betting surrounding the player being shown a yellow card during the match was highly unusual. So this would be a big story. A Premier League game. It's very easy to assume what Premier League players, they're all on enough money. No reason whatsoever to do this.
Yeah.
But I mean, if there's something amiss here, there will be a story which could be very, very significant. Now, the defender Bradley Wood, back in 2018, who played for Lincoln, they were on a good cup run, and he intentionally picked up yellow cards. He was banned for 6 years.
Yeah, I mean, I would have covered a lot of this stuff. Unfortunately, our old friends, the suspicious betting patterns, has been like, you know, was a considerable part of the Irish football landscape for, you know, on and off over a number of years. And there would have been games and cases. And as a result, you probably would have gained a lot more knowledge about how this system would operate, like the memorandum of understandings that would exist between associations and bookmakers to alert them to patterns. Because
and sorry to interrupt, I would presume for something like yellow cards, this is not something that the majority of people bet on because it's just not a particularly interesting.
A lot of movement, and it wouldn't take much movement in a market to raise
a
red flag either.
A small amount would start to look suspicious.
But like there was, you know, wasn't there stories back in the day of like games where, you know, the ball kicks off and it's booted out of play and what's going on? And there would be instances, and this whole thing of spot betting, definitely there would have been a lot of discussions around it in the, as you said, at English lower league level, not just that case you referenced. I think there was multiple, or certainly several other cases. I don't want to throw out names without being sure of them, but there was other cases that spring to mind for me, and all based along that lines of, you know, yellow cards or fouls or
first throw-in.
Maybe penalty concessions would be the upper end of it, in terms of something that would be very much like some of it people would say, you see, that, well, is this really match fixing? You know, it's more on the more on the kinder side of the equation. You know what I mean? It's like, well, I mean, it's not influencing the result. I mean, is it someone just doing whatever at whatever minute of the game? Well, that's an unthreatening sort of scenario for the integrity of the game. But of course, no arbiter, no sort of company can judge that. I mean, if you're deemed to have done anything like that, it's a very serious offence, and you are going to have the book thrown at you. Yeah.
Well, there's not a huge amount more we can say about it, but that was breaking news this evening. The Shamrock Rovers situation.
Yeah, so I would have reported this today. The League of Ireland season is coming back on February the 18th. Granted, I think a lot of the attention that night might be on St Pat's and Shells with Damien Duff and that game over in Talca, which I think will be brilliant. But Shamrock Rovers are the defending champions and they're due to play UCD in Tala. And I think, you know, with Jack Byrne coming back, with the fact that I think over 7,000 at their last league game, you always have a great crowd the first league game of the season. It's been a long break, etc., etc. Like Nathan Murphy bringing his kids up there to Tala, you know, everyone's got on board with it. But they're playing that first match, unless they can find some appeal route that will be listened to, they're going to play behind closed doors, because people may have seen this back in November. Shamrock Rovers played down in Waterford and there was basically a sort of a repeater firework sent from the crowd. I think it actually might have gone into the roof and ricocheted, but anyway, it ended up
what's
going,
a repeater firework?
I honestly don't know. Like, I just know, I mean, the answer might be in the question, you know. Repeater, it's not, it doesn't just have one spark,
like,
in it, it's got a bit more.
Candles you blow out and light again.
Yeah, something like that. I don't know. I mean, if someone can clarify what it is. I just said it.
Do you think, as
it's a technical term.
It's a bit silly. We still have, fireworks are still illegal in Ireland, isn't it?
Well, I mean, that's taking things in a different...
No,
different,
sorry, just an aside. I was just talking about this recently. I was just talking about this at New Year's.
New Year's Eve. Well, I see.
Like, what's the story? Why don't... Like, they're just readily available. It might be better if we just regulated it and just...
We live in a similar part of the woods, and the shows were going everywhere around that neck of the woods.
Oh, I thought we were at war.
It was unbelievable.
Yeah, no.
Down the road, it was like, this is quite a serious situation.
Suddenly, a moment where you realise how many people have illegally got fireworks. And
But to bring it back even to the point that, like, the sort of the pyrotechnic shows... are very common at League of Ireland games, like hugely common, and bizarrely, like, you'll be heavily sanctioned for them, but it wouldn't be unusual to then find these crowd shots used in sort of official publication material to, like, sell the atmosphere of the look at, like, the Bowes St Pat's Cup final.
Yeah.
Like, the stadium was enveloped in smoke for the first 10 minutes, and it was, I think, talking to people who wouldn't necessarily be regulars that went, they just thought it was an amazing occasion.
Yeah.
Right, so you used to be that, but this incident was, listen,
and sorry, I would just say, like, ideally they just wouldn't be around at all because terrible things happen to kids at Halloween.
Yeah, but exactly. Yeah.
What I mean is the dodgy black market ones, which aren't regulated and blow up 10 seconds earlier than they're meant to. We move away from that, maybe.
Yeah.
Well, sorry, I'm turning this into some kind of late night talk show.
I didn't realise you were such an avid pro fireworks man. Maybe you can do this in your show with Jackie.
It was just at Halloween, the law abiding citizen that I am. Or sorry,
when you're presenting the Today Show in the afternoon on some RTÉ Virgin Media hybrid.
It's just a New Year's. Channel. It's just a New Year's where suddenly it sounded like World War III had broken out. I was like, my God, how many people have fireworks here?
And your first, I mean, what are you becoming that your first thought was, this needs to be regulated as a market? I mean, what has happened to you?
It woke me up. I was like, what is going on?
Yeah. Did you not stay up?
No, I'm joking. I did stay up.
Oh, God. Okay.
Although, not much beyond.
No. 5 past 12. Yeah. You heard it from the top of the stairs.
Sorry. Repeater firework.
But anyway, right, this Waterford incident, and, like, we've even sort of been...
this is serious.
Like, Anthony Wordsworth, one of the Waterford players, was struck, needed a bit of treatment.
Right.
I mean, and, like, if this had gone in the wrong direction, and to be fair, I think on the night, other Shamrock Rovers fans rooted out who was the culprits, and they were arrested, and you know, sometimes clubs can be slow to condemn this stuff, you know, you would say, but you would say they responded quickly enough. There was a few stupid tweets put out at the night, quips, but I think the following day they got on board with it. But I have to say, it deserved a really strong sanction and punishment, and you'd be expecting a big fine. I think a closed doors for your first home match of the following season, when this happened at an away game, it's a strong sanction. And I even see
it's a very expensive sanction.
Like, I mean, I don't know what figure you can put on it, but, like, generally that first night you generally get a really good crowd, you know, and I know they have a lot of season ticket holders and stuff. Mm-hmm. But anyway, like, you've seen, say, even officials from, say, Bowes, their rivals, coming out saying this is quite harsh, because I think a lot of people in the league know, almost there but for the grace of God stuff. There's been other instances over the last year that maybe weren't as eye catching and as, like, this, just the pictures that in the images, this was just captured in such a way. But I mean, you know, you see stuff happening at games that I think people at other clubs would be like, yeah, you can't really legislate for one or two idiots just throwing something. And you'd like to think the culture exists that people around them wouldn't happen, and people would say, well, you know, into the water boundary of, well, these clubs' fans have behaved in a particular way at different times, and this was overdue, and you'll hear a lot of that stuff, and you'll have the water boundary. But I think as a precedent, and just to be clear, it was the FAI's, they have an independent disciplinary control unit who made this decision. So it wasn't like the FAI, they hand over this to a disciplinary panel who've made this ruling, which I think if it set a precedent, then if anything happens somewhere else this season, you'll have fans of other clubs saying, well, their next game at home should be behind closed doors and stuff. So I'm not sure. I actually think it's a bit harsh, while not also seeking to trivialise the event and what happened. You're just sitting there thinking about what we need to do about fireworks.
No. I agree with you on the seriousness of it.
And it has to be a deterrent.
You have to protect players. But as you said, it seems like a hell of an onus to put in the clubs to guarantee that every single person that comes through the turnstiles, not least in an away match when they're not even necessarily in charge of security, is going to not do something stupid. Because if we've known anything about football crowds, is that there's generally someone in there who might do something stupid. So I don't quite know what the appropriate punishment is, because it is very serious, and if a player was injured or could be injured, it has to be absolutely smacked down, you know, clamped down on. So I feel, on the one hand, I agree with you, it seems harsh, and yet what is the appropriate punishment?
I don't know. If you ban them from going to, say, a load of away games, you're actually, because they have one of the biggest away supports in the country, you're actually hitting other clubs in the pocket. So they're at home to UCD, you're looking at UCD. Interesting. If you see the first home game of the season, you know, don't have many UCD fans complaining about missing their first game.
Yeah.
You can put your sort of hat on around this stuff and think, you know, is this sort of almost like a version of a compromise solution? But
Maybe it doesn't.
But I think there's,
I've sympathy for the Rovers players, but maybe it does need really strong action.
I don't know, though.
Imagine this becomes a thing in our league.
A thing to a degree where, like, stuff gets chucked on.
What kind of stuff?
But, like, you've seen, going down that road, but, I mean, there was footage of another goal in another game recently where, I don't know what was thrown on when players were celebrating. Was it a firework or something?
Flair?
Yeah, I've seen, like, you see flares chucked onto the pitch. I've been at several games in the last season where the game has been halted to take something off the pitch. You know, one or two games spring to mind where, like, I think one group, like, fans chucked something on, and the closest player to it was their own player. You know, it's just like... Like, I don't know. It's true. Sometimes you can lash a decision, but then you say, okay, well, what should the sanction have been then? Yeah. You know, and
because you could fine Rovers, but that's not going to make a headline. It's not going to register with the fans.
No. And look, it definitely registered, and it will if the season starts on February 18th with an empty stadium for them in the first game.
You see what it
does. That does register, but
what it does is it will provoke a social pressure. As in, if I am the idiot that's thinking about throwing a flare in amongst my fellow fans and they know this is going to result in us being banned from the stadium next week, I'll think twice.
Yeah, but I guess the presumption there is that the people who do it are, like, fully engaged, sort of, like, thinking that way. Like, or is it more just...
Cause trouble
and an impromptu act that doesn't the suggestion there is almost that it's some kind of like deep hardcore fan who just had a moment of madness.
Sure.
Like, what, you know, you sort of have the elements that attach, but I mean,
no, I'm presuming the motivation.
There's a lot of different views on it, but I'd imagine this one will rumble on a bit in terms.
Are Rovers appealing?
I gather, and I wasn't aware of this when I filed it initially, but they have already tried and got nowhere with an initial one, but I think. They're going to consider other options and see what they can do, but I'm not sure what their avenues will be at this stage. Not so sure.
Dan McDonald of the Irish Independent, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you, Joe,
appreciate it. Our football show was brought to you by Sky. You can watch every single live Premier League game on Sky Sports, BT Sport and Premier Sports. It has just gone full time at the Brentford Community Stadium, a 3-1 win for Manchester United. There was a late consolation there for Brentford. We'll take a short break.